And so this year we're going on the issue of finance. I'm affiliated with Good News for Israel, which is a newsletter here. And Good News is the second oldest outreach to the Jewish people with the gospel. Started in 1886, was encouraging them to return to their homeland before Zionism existed, for example. I am also president of Faith in the Future Foundation. It's a new foundation. Wilfred Hahn, whose book I'm going to be talking about, is one of the board members, as is also Herbert Stollers. Good News is having one of our foundation affiliates, Zacharias Anani, speak at their annual banquet in St. Louis Park next month on May 21. Zacharias is a former Muslim extremist. He fought on the Muslim side during the Lebanese Civil War and became a believer, and now is actively engaged in evangelism, and Faith in the Future supports him. And we also support native-born evangelists or citizens of Israel and Palestinians looking to promote peace in the Middle East through Christ. So that's a little bit there. Today, I've got quite a bit to cover. There may be a little bit of time at the end for questions. Otherwise, you can talk to me at the booth. There's a lot of information at www.gnfi.org, and at the bottom of the outlines that were handed out, you have this contact information for myself and also for Mr. Hahn, who moved recently. So the addresses in his books and materials are not accurate. I've got stickers for some of them. I want to start out with a couple of scriptures. And today we're going to be talking about three main things. I'm going to talk about the use of money in our personal lives. And I think we all know that if we misuse finances in our personal lives, there are personal consequences. But I'm also going to talk about this as regards to our nation, our civilization, our society. If our society misuses money and finance, there will be consequences. And then the third part of this is to make us aware that we might have our personal finances in order and still suffer the consequences of our societal sins, because we do live in a society that is far from godly. And I wanted to start in Colossians 1. And I'm going to read a couple of things here, because it sort of gives the whole reason as to why I'm talking about this. And I'm going to start in verse 9. "For this reason also, since the day we heard of it, we've not ceased to pray for you, or to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will, in all spiritual wisdom and understanding, so that you may walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, to please him in all respects, bearing fruit in every good work, and increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with all power according to his glorious might, for the attaining of all steadfastness and patience, joyously, giving thanks to the Father who has qualified us to share in the inheritance of the saints in light. For he has delivered us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son." And this is a spiritual reality that comes to the believer. But if we do not walk accordingly, in other words, if we don't manage our material affairs effectively, it will reduce our capacity to bear fruit and to effectively do what God has given us to do, including the freedom to homeschool. I am a homeschooler. We've been doing this for all our kids since they were born. My oldest is 13, and it's very important to have our finances in order to have that freedom and to enjoy it. Also, I'm going to be talking a little bit about how the Bible sort of anticipated this age of materialism. In James 4 and 5, James is writing to the church. This isn't to the world. This is to the church. And he talks about how the source of quarrels and conflicts, in James 4, verse 1. He says, "Is not the source your pleasures that wage war in your members? You lust and you have not, so you commit murder. You are envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You do not ask and do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, so that you may spend it on your pleasures. You adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God?" You see, we live in a consumer society. And the society that we live in, it's pretty easy for us sometimes to see the problems and ills in society. What we don't see so clearly is how that blinds us to our own problems. See, because we're in the midst of it, we're swimming in this sea of red, so to speak, and so we don't see the red maybe that's on our own skin. In chapter 5, James writes, he says, "Come now, you rich." Now, this is rich church members, okay? And remember, in comparison to the rest of the world, we are all phenomenally well off. And let's never forget that. He says, "Come now, you rich, weep and howl for your miseries which are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted and your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver have rusted, and their rust will be a witness against you and will consume your flesh like fire. In the last days you have stored up your treasure." You see, if you get into the last part of chapter 4 just before this, God says through James, "Submit therefore to God and resist the devil, and he will flee from you." Because, see, God desires his spirit to dwell within us, but if we're proud, if we're not humble, that can't take place. So we need to submit to him in our personal lives. There needs to be the humility in our personal lives. God is interested in this so that his spirit may dwell within us. But he's also interested in the entire world. So there's going to come a humility to the entire world as well, that his spirit might dwell in many more. And part of that, it has to do with wealth. Because wealth is power. It's material power. And when we have a lot of it, we don't think we need God deep down inside. Even if we know it, we get used to being able to just pull out the credit card or write a check if we don't use credit cards and take care of what's needed instead of depending on God. And this has affected the church as well. And the thing about it is that in our society today, so many expectations are risen, and we have so many false material expectations. What do we need? And we feel like we're shortchanged by God or our neighbor or society or in some way because we don't have a good perspective. We don't have a godly perspective. And so I'm going to try to address some of this today. And Mr. Hahn's book, The End Time Money Snare, How to Live Free, talks about how our society has come to be this way, how it works, and what relationship that may have to prophecy, and as well as some common sense steps to take to try to minimize your risk in this end time. He's a former international banker involved in securities who left that industry after becoming a believer because it was incompatible with his concept of faith. Okay, so that gives you a little bit of overview. And basically, your freedom, my freedom is precious. It's paid for by the blood of Jesus. And so we need to guard that freedom. We have freedom to educate our children at home. And finances is a very important factor in that. Now, many, many homeschool families find it probably, I haven't seen a statistic, but probably almost all, where you have basically one income provider. Otherwise, it's very hard to homeschool unless you take a very unschooling approach. And when you look at all the curriculum out here in the exhibits, you know that's not typical to Mache. But personal finances, how we spend and earn strategies, this is one factor. Participation in our national and international financial systems is overlooked. There are certain risks maybe you are not aware of, and I hope to review those today. Our personal financial strategies, that some things, some general suggestions I'll make to try to ease that engagement and entanglement in the world. Consumerism, we've heard the word consumer. It's another nice way of saying cultural greed. And greed has become very acceptable as a value in our society. And as I mentioned earlier, the sins of our society blind us to how much that has seeped into how we run our lives. In other words, we might have our heart on a firm foundation, but what we're actually doing, there may be a little disconnect there. And so I'm asking you to think about this in review. I'm not your judge. And if I say anything that really hits home, I don't know you, most of you, well enough to do that. So just take it as for what it's worth and praise God. Because if we are honest with ourselves, God can work with us to deliver us from anything. I have experienced that in my life. I've been in advertising, I've been in the investment industry, and now I teach business at night as well as working the foundation and history and about 12 other topics. But Greed is an inappropriate attitude toward things of value. My well-being is equal to possessions. In other words, if some part of your self-image and your self-worth is tied up in what you own, what kind of car you drive, what kind of house or neighborhood you live in, then maybe you've been a little bit affected by greed. It enters our lives stealthily. It masquerades as good. It doesn't say, here I come, greed, I'm going to, you know, embrace me. You're going to love being greedy. No, it doesn't do that at all. It comes in very quietly, very small steps, seeps in around the edges of our life. And in truth, it is one of the most effective ways that the enemy can separate us from God. Now, it may not yield to eternal separation, but it can yield to a functional separation so that we are not as good servants yielding the fruit, as I was reading in Colossians, that we should. And my purpose here is that we would all come out of this and in some way be able to bring forth more fruit to the glory of God, that He could work more effectively through us, because it's only by His power and might that we can do anything. We can do nothing on our own. Thomas Aquinas said that when we do evil, we always will to act under the aspect of good. And some of the things I'm going to say today may be a little different than what you've heard in Christian media. And so just take it for what it's worth and compare it to the Bible, and you stand before God. We camouflage our greed. We think we have a right to prosperity. I have an MBA. I should be able to get a $100,000 a year job. Doesn't happen just that way. We could be acquisitive or stingy and indifferent. And I'm quoting some of this from a Christianity Today article. I have the articles up here if you want to look at them. This was in the January issue. Another vice that looks like a virtue, the three faces of greed. And another thing that I think we all know who have lived, I see a few hairs here whiter than mine or approaching the grayness of my own. You know, things have changed in our lifetime as far as what's in the marketplace. When we go to a grocery store, I mean, you know, you need three times the space to hold everything now that they did even 20 or 30 years ago. The customer is king. He gets what he wants. There are 85 different kinds of crackers you can buy. There are 285 kinds of cookies. That's because there's more sugar in them. There are 80 different pain relievers. Thousands of mutual funds, hundreds of cell phones, and dozens of plans. Why? Because with the electronic media, with the computers and things, we can divide up the market, okay, so we can get right down into who you are, ethnic background, neighborhood, income, you know, whether you prefer outdoor sports or indoor sports or watching them on TV or what, all these things. It's called one-to-one marketing segmentation by profiles. And you know, when I was doing advertising back in the 90s, even then we were having to deal with some of these different cable channels. Well, now there's 500 or 600 of them. And, you know, and each one has a marketing demographic. And so depending on what your product or service is, you advertise on that. So electronic media compete for your life. It steals your life. And I'm not just talking about the TV. There's the computer. There's the internet. There's the radio. There's all kinds of things. And for our family situation, it's very important that we guard against this. And so I sort of, in my own home, you know, we don't really watch TV. We get a few videos. The kids do a little bit with the internet. And they have a very, you know, some very simple, like Pac-Man kind of electronic games. But we try to keep it to like an hour a day or so because it destroys the mind. Okay, they would rather read. We go to the library, and it takes two boxes to bring the books home. Okay, they love that, and I'm very thankful for the library. And my wife says, "Well, if you have to pay fees to something, pay it to the library, but not to the credit card." So keep that in mind. But think about it and review that, because one of the other things that the electronic media does is it puts all these images as to what's out there, and you don't need to know about all of that stuff. They want you to know about it, because if you don't know about it, you're not going to be buying it. So managing expectations, this whole thing of image advertising is really, really key. I mean, this goes everything from automobiles to mutual funds or to an individual stock. You can have two competing products or services, and they'd be virtually alike under the hood, so to speak. but one is priced three times more than the other. And then if you can get it at the thrift store or on eBay, you can get it for a quarter of that. I mean, that's what we do. We see what we want packs at REI, and then we go on eBay and we buy them for 25 cents on the dollar, new or used once or twice. You see, these are some personal strategies that probably some of you are already doing. My wife's a past master at all of that. So one of the things also just to remember is that quality time is not viewing time together. Sitting in the living room watching a TV show or something, you just as well could be separated by a continent on cell phones talking about the football game or something as you could sitting in the living room. If you're watching a media, that's not personal interaction. That's not family time together. Okay, because you're actually interacting with that media. That's just a little point there. Consumer Christianity, our church methods of marketing or discipleship or how churches or congregations present themselves have been tremendously impacted by our society. I'm not going to be talking about any one specific book or idea or strategy, but it's just a fact of our environment, our social, cultural, spiritual environment, and it affects how we operate as communities of faith as well. You know, we have this error of competition, and it's kind of like, well, we want to get the believers in our church rather than the one down the street, and we're forgetting about the lost. You know, that's one thing that I have seen. And how do you measure success? You know, when do you know that your church is successful? Your budget goes up? Do you run a numbers system on professions of faith but don't do anything about discipleship? You know, there are a lot of issues like this where our culture impacts us as a family of believers, too. I'm just asking the questions to be aware. Between 1998 and 2001, 80,000 people, believers, lost $2 billion in religious scams. Now, that came from Christianity Today, too. And also the same month, January, and it talks about Ponzi schemes and things like that to get into the churches. You see, we tend to be trusting people, and when another brother in the faith comes and presents something to us, we pretty much assume it's okay. And it isn't, because they've been deluded. And a lot of these plans intentionally pay off leaders or influential people so they can say, yeah, I got my money, or it did this, it paid the 80% it promised, or whatever. And you see, the thing is why? Because when we save money, we're not interested in saving. We want to become wealthy out of those savings. We want something for nothing. It's like a gambling kind of attitude. And in fact, they've done things about the volatility of the stock market and how much money is being spent in the entertainment gambling casino industry, and they go pretty much in tandem. It's a societal thing. We want the something for nothing, or for a little bit. Faith of trusting individuals is destroyed by this. It divides and neutralizes families and congregations. And of course, the money donated does not do anything for the work of God. So that is a big issue. And if you are involved too much or relying too much on mammon, a lot of times it's church building funds that get scammed like this, then you open yourself up to being struck by the enemy. You know, if you're counting on anything material, expect the enemy to go after it. He'll take it away. Now, on personal financing, all budgeting is being honest with yourself about what you're spending and where. And a lot of personal finance has to do with really knowing what it is you are doing. Where is your money going? And so that you have the information to make decisions. And I'm telling you right now, if you have any kind of quasi unstable situation, make your decisions now before the economy gets worse. Okay? It's like the old saying, you can only borrow money when you don't need it. Okay? The banks will fall all over you when you don't need to borrow. But when you really need it, it never is there. I know a young man right now is 35. He just lost his job at UPS, paying $1,000 a week. He has a new truck that he got, maybe 10 months ago, which he traded up from the new truck he got 3 years ago. And now he's thinking he's going to have to sell his truck, and then he won't have a vehicle to find a new job. But he has no money, really, to be making his payments. And this is, he had a job at a very stable company. He thought, well, no problem, but things come up. And this is one of the things. Did you know, about 72% of families in Minnesota have two incomes, okay? Did you know that statistically, if you have a two-income family, you're more likely to become bankrupt than if you are on one income? That's a bit of encouragement to take. The reason is that if you have one income and there's a problem with a single income producer, then you do have two people who, for a short period of time, can go out and find some work. Whereas statistically, what happens is if you have a two-income family, very quickly, people become dependent on both incomes, and that's the danger. If you can only live on one income and you have the other as extra and you really are reducing debt or some other kinds of a plan program, then it's different. Okay? And how you deal with debt, as far as if you're buying an asset that you're going to use to make money, like a lawnmower so you can mow lawns, as opposed to just eating out an extra time a month or something, that's different use of money too. And I think you understand that. So these spending strategies, basically we want to look at net outgo versus income. And I'm going to talk a little bit about housing later on. That's one of the areas where our expectations have grown. Houses as a whole have just gotten bigger, 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 and bigger, And people have naturally thought, well, I'm doing well and I paid this down and I should trade up to a bigger house. Maybe not. Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit more later. saving strategies. There is a high cost of borrowing. I've got an article here. If you're late on your credit card payment, interest automatically goes up. Could be 30%. You have a late fee, $25, $50. And the article talks a lot about how people who start getting a little bit behind pay thousands and thousands of dollars and almost don't make any progress in paying off their debt. And now with a new law passed, the bankruptcy rules are tightened up. So, shall we say, the predatory aspects of the finance industry have more freedom to participate in their sin than they did before. We have to be more on the lookout. So there's a lot of costs there that you might think, well, I'm doing okay now, but what happens if there's a little bit of problem? And you do need to have a little bit of cash on hand. My situation, I've really tended in the past to focus on paying off debt and not worrying about having too much cash, because I figured I'd save money on interest and this and that. And, if there's a time when things are a little sticky, you need cash to make the payments until you can work out a strategy and get it in operation. So I'm saying that with the uncertain economic times ahead of us, we need to try to also keep in mind that it's good to have cash on hand. Cash is the lifeblood. Now, if you're looking at ways to make a little extra money, don't forget the cost of time involved. A lot of times these little extra income producing things take so much time and they steal it from your family, and before you know it, your kids are grown, they're out the door, and they're not members of the body of Christ, and you have other problems. Okay? So count all of the costs. I'm not going to get into all this thing on gambling and giving, because I wrote a book some years ago called God is Not a Slot Machine, where I dealt with some of the things on the giving come-ons that there were on some of the media ministries. And it's almost like, well, if you give to them, a blessing's going to come. And they count on the fact that it might, by chance, happen enough times, and then they've got the people hooked. It's the same as if you walk into a casino and put the money in the slot, and you win the first or second time. Oh, then you keep going. Okay, it's a mental thing. Investments, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And multi-level home business opportunities, I generally have problems with those for a number of reasons. Beyond just selling products or services that are more high price than what could be gotten in the open market, I have a problem personally because I don't like to think of every relationship I have with someone as a potential business relationship where I'm going to make some money. I think this is the commodification of love that the Bible warns against as the system of Babylon. World finance. Your personal finances can be in order and you will not escape the collapse that's coming. So I'm going to talk about how these national and economic things affect us. You saw the little House of Cards illustration I gave you. And see, what happens is, if you, any of you have been in business, like I have been in small business or working in small business most of my life, there comes a time when one of the people that owes you a little bit says, you know, I can't pay you right now. I'll get you, you know, next month. And then what does that leave? Where does that leave me? Well, then there's somebody I can't pay. And the thing mushrooms, okay? So it takes one little hiccup and things can really happen. It's what I call a pyramid economy. It's an economy that's built on this concept of using debt. And so many places finance their purchases. And, you know, and that's they're making money if they do that, you see? Because if you walk into some place with a car or furniture or whatever and they say no interest, no payments for a year or whatever, but you sign the contract, they take that contract and go and sell it. Okay? They've literally made money out of nothing. Okay? Out on basically on your promise to pay. That's the way the government does the same thing with the deficit in its budget. It's counting on us making money next year to pay our taxes. Okay? We are actually mortgaged to do that. That's the whole Social Security system and tax system was set up. And come up with a way to get around our constitutional rights to do that. So the other problem is fraudulent information. Now, we've seen some of this last few years in the investment community, executives and this and that. Some of the information is just plain wrong. It's made up or it's hidden. And so you don't have the information available to make a right decision. In other words, you think you have the information, but you really don't. So you got to be cautious about that. And you've got to allow that's a risk. If you're big enough, you know, it's like banks. They know that, you know, if they loan out enough, yeah, there's going to be a certain number that don't pay, but they've got enough who are paying and they've built that into their margins. I mean, if you have a large enough situation, you can do that. That's life insurance and everything based on the same thing. But if a basic assumption is incorrect, it's going to create a problem. The nation's burden of debt is affecting the dollar. And this is a problem with holding cash because the dollars are going to go down, okay? And, you know, maybe a little bit of silver or gold or whatever, but, I mean, that's not going to really, that's a stopgap method. And a lot of times what I've seen, those kinds of things are far too high priced. You're paying way over what those gold or silver coins might be worth in a case of natural or national problem. We have a situation right now where, I think if you remember back 2000, 2001, we had a big problem in the stock market and the economy really wobbled. The Federal Reserve has been pumping cash, that's like oil, onto the fires of our economy in order to keep it from dying entirely. And so as a result, primarily the value of houses have gone up. More so on the East Coast and the West Coast and here in the Midwest, but also here. The problem is if your value of the housing goes up faster than your income. That's where a bubble creates, and that is what has been happening. Just as the wealthy have more money now, the top 20% have 50% of all the national wealth now, whereas you go back to 73, it was only 44%. I don't know, it's only 6%. But that means we're talking billions and trillions of dollars, and it's a shift, you see. It's a shift away. We have net stopped having any income in surplus of our outgoes. Since 1999, each year personal debt has grown faster than personal income. There's been a total more borrowed than more earned. So on a personal level, that's like saying, okay, I made $40,000 and spent $45,000. Well, you might be able to get away with that one year, but it's been that way since 1999 and it's gotten worse each year. Now $350 billion a year more is borrowed. And that does not include all the extra mortgages and buying new houses that are too high. And in California, 70% of all home purchases are on adjustable rate mortgages. What's going to happen as those rates keep creeping up? And what's going to happen when California's economy tanks? Okay, 25% of the California economy is based on real estate. So there are a number of factors, and I don't have time here to go into all of them. The basic point is that we're riding a crest of confidence. We have the strongest military in the world, and the world is addicted to the dollar. 70% of world trade takes place in the dollar. The euro is gaining. The Asian nations are trying to have an Asian common market and combine the Chinese currency and the Japanese currency and all that. Why? Because they want to get rid of this dollar problem. You see, basically what happens is you take a country like Korea or Taiwan, they sell stuff to us and they get dollars. So what they've done is they have bought U.S. treasuries at 4% and then loaned the money to do that to their native people at 6 and 7%. So they're eating a negative. And this can only last so long, and this is why they're starting to say we have to find some other options. And we had a real scare about 6 weeks ago when the dollar crashed almost 10% in a couple days because Korea said, well, we may not just always buy dollars anymore. So what's the net? My model for life in these times is Abraham and his family. Not that I have a bunch of retainers and extra wives. But we and our family, you know, we homeschool, we're a self-contained unit. We come up with family strategies in our spending and our earning. And we're looking for a city whose builder and maker is God, or whose architect and builder is God. It's very important. That's from Hebrews 11:10. That's what I'm looking and counting on, not a 401k, a pension, or a huge IRA. Now, typically, I put about a third of my planning as if things are going to go on forever and fairly decently, and about two-thirds like it probably won't. So I do have some savings in an IRA, but it'd probably buy an inexpensive car. That's about it. And not that I maybe could have had more, but you know, life is the way it is. And I'm not, for the last number of years, I've not been worried about making money. I've been trying to serve God as He leads me. And ministry is not an area where I look to make money. So God or mammon, only one can rule your life. And believe me, if you don't have mammon working for you, you're working for it. And that's basically the way it is. Jesus put it that way. And you have to try to see what is the basis of your decision-making process. Now, I've been on various charitable organizations. I was an officer in Rotary for a while. And, you know, a lot of times things were based on, well, how can we most effectively use the money? Well, we're going to reach more. Everything was based on money. It comes down to dollars. Same thing is in business budgeting process. And dollars, dollars, dollars. Well, there are standards and the right thing to do, even though it costs more. And so you need to try to think about that. Because if you don't look at your daily life, you've made some very big decisions. Because there are consequences to how you live each day. They add up. It's like the old thing of which would you rather have, $1 million or a penny doubled every day for a month? You know, the penny doubled every day for a month gets much bigger. So it's important that we seek first the kingdom so we can be free to teach our children so that they will learn to do the same, especially by our example, because what we do is far more important than anything we could ever say. And the power of ourselves, the power of man, lies in our decision. And if we find ourselves in accommodation or in accord with the will of God, those prayers will be answered. So I mentioned some briefly about some of the problems with the dollar. You know, money is artificial creation of the Federal Reserve Bank. It's not backed by any gold or silver or anything like that. It's backed by confidence. And there are different ways to speculate versus the risks involved. And I mentioned about the problem with gaining accurate information or even information fast enough. Today, the investment market is open 24/7. It's global. Finances shift in the matter of minutes. In fact, a number of economists have said that all the money running to China could change very quickly at some point as the rates on the Federal Reserve notes get up. As the Treasury rates rise, people may not be willing to take the risk in China. You know, you can't export your profits out of China either. And so, you know, there's some things there. They're still converting from a communist government where, you know, there is no such thing as unemployment. You work at a factory whether they need you or not, and so they have tons of employees and redundancy. And they've got been making bad loans to those companies in order to keep them going. There's a lot of problems there, things that we don't see that are happening beneath the surface. Basically, Mr. Hahn and I suggest that you look at saving rather than trying to grow rich through investments. So you want to try to conserve what you put aside so that you have the flexibility. And he favors conservative income-producing stocks or bonds if you're in that, and of course, strong exposure to international. And maybe some gold or silver, some things like that. But there are going to be moral hazards and risks in all of them. There's no bulletproof answer. The main thing is you have to not depend on your money. You've got to depend on God. And then wisely use the money with the information that you have and can have. And that's about it. Just don't be surprised and don't be expected that if the information that you use to make your decisions turns out, well, it wasn't exactly right. Okay? Housing bubble, not a problem here. I mentioned some of that. Don't think of your home as your treasure chest. You need a place to live. It's extremely important. Can you imagine trying to homeschool without a place to live? It's terrible when you see family who are homeless. And so, you know, we need to work towards a debt-free use of that asset. If you haven't refinanced or don't have fixed rates at the 5 or 6% you can get, you should, because the interest rates are going to go up. Resist the lure of the mortgage line of credit. You know, many people say only use that for specific property improvement, and then don't be exaggerating on what you think. You know, if you spend $10,000 putting a deck on your house, you're not going to improve the value of the house $10,000. It's not going to happen. The other thing is that you want to have a low ratio of debt versus value. You don't want to be sitting there with when housing prices drop 20 or 30% and have a loan that's higher than the value of your house. I was in California when that happened 25 years ago. It's not fun. Okay? There won't be people around. Wealth is an illusion. It's here today, gone tomorrow. And when the United States runs into trouble, don't expect anyone to help us. Okay? It's not going to happen. The world thinks it can solve its problems using wealth, world trade, things like that. We know it's only going to come by Jesus Christ returning. And I want to, again, invite you by our booth, look at some of the books. In particular, on this topic, I have Mr. Hahn's book. As a former international banker, he talks about the six money machine pistons, human consumption, trade with others, flow of money, capitalization as a multiplier, share, growth through securitization, value is in the eye of the beholder, the devaluation of labor. You know, we have a huge problem. It's not just Social Security, all the private pensions too. Those companies can't pay those obligations. Okay? We have a huge problem because of abortion. We've killed off future workers. And without having young people earning, there's no way these pension and social security system can work, either here or in Europe. But generally speaking, Europe has been more conservative than the United States. We have, as a nation, driven the growth towards globalization, and we've ridden on its crest. And whatever might happen prophetically to that and how that could play out, the fact of the matter is that right now, our nation is the promulgator of the doctrine of Babylon, the gospel of Babylon, of wealth, that you too can be wealthy. You know, how are we going to solve the problem in the Middle East? Well, if we can just get those Muslims a good job and start trading with the Israelis, well, who wants to blow up a customer? No, there are real spiritual problems that need spiritual solutions. That's true for our personal lives, and it's also true for the world. Thank you very much for coming. You're free to come up. I have some books here if you want to take a quick look. And how much time do we have? 15 minutes before we have to be out? 10 minutes? Oh, okay. So, okay. So we don't have. I'd like to be considerate, you know. So.
Could you comment a little bit about?
Sure.
It seems to me that the productivity is sort of decreasing.
No, there's the tapes run out. It's only 45 minutes.
I could speak up a little louder. The question was: it seems to me in our country that our productivity is decreasing while our consumption, we're consuming services, of course, are increasing.
Right.
To help the consumer, but don't we have to keep being productive?
The bigger problem that Mr. Han points out is that business now is directed towards making money instead of making a quality product or service and wealth coming as a byproduct. The shift in our nation today is get the wealth. That's the greed factor. And so because business is looking at making money, then we ship jobs overseas and this and that. You know, we're not also thinking about freedom. See, why? Well, because we're thinking we're going to run the world through commerce. This is what ancient Tyre did. And there's some interesting correlations between Tyre as a sea power and trading power with our society today. It's Tyre that invented slave farming. It's the only thing the Romans took from Tyre was this concept of having these thousands of slaves run the huge latifundia, the big plantations of the ancient Romans. It's the only book from Carthaginian ever translated into Latin. Punic. Okay? So productivity is an issue. Yes. Any other questions? Since we don't have time, that's fine. I don't mind answering. If you need to leave, please. You're free. Otherwise, yeah?
Why doesn't either of the political parties want to step up to the plate and really do something concerning our national debt?
They're both paid off.
By who?
By the people who control the debt and who benefit from the present situation. If you look at both parties, they both have very wealthy people involved. And this is the whole situation, again, you really get into this about the wealth. Wealthier getting more and the average guy getting stuck with a bill, it's huge. You know, it's kind of like, you know, a CEO fails at their job and they get a $25 million severance package. Yeah.
I was just thinking, doesn't have to do with the voter too. I mean, most people aren't like us here who are really thinking long term. Most people would rather postpone pain and get pleasure now. So the voters, they want more things.
There's a lot of involved in that. I mean, there's the idea that there's only two parties, and you know, you're throwing your vote away if you vote something else. And but the point is that the vested interests of business are in both parties, and most of them split. They give to both. They just shift the percentages based on the election.
When has it never not been this way?
It's always been this way, but the problem is it's gotten worse, and it's seeped into this thing. See, we have, through the new financial tools, I didn't get a lot into the derivatives and the securitization and things like this, where we've built this pyramid up higher. For instance, you know, like a 30-year bond usually stays in a portfolio something like 2 to 3 days. Okay? So Warren Buffett is one of the people who has talked about this from time to time and warned against things. It's like 3 years ago, he said, it's going to be 8 years before we really get out of the economy thing. And he is, you know, one of the more famous investors, and he has made many of these statements, even though he himself is making money in the system. He sees the inequalities that are in there. You know, think about this, is that... with the Social Security, some people are saying, well, we need to double the 15% withholdings. Well, that comes out of everyone's pocket real quick, you know, in order to keep it going. So there are no clean answers. You know, part of the long-term situation is that we need a whole new economy. See, but in the meantime, we have to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. So we have to be involved, but at the same time know that there's always the risk that we could be the one left holding the bag. There's a question over here.
Are you aware of any Christians or Christian groups that are speaking out against usury or predatory lending practices? I mean, you see
I've seen a few articles here or there, but it's rare. You hear Muslims talk about it more than Christians. Yeah.
I just want to make a quick comment on the gentleman asking on the national debt. If you don't understand the basic philosophies of fiat currency, you can't understand anything about Social Security or the problems today. A good book on the history of that is Ed Griffiths, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Jekyll Island's a island off of Georgia where they can see...
Big resort. And the Federal Reserve came in. And President Wilson, who first backed it because his election was paid for by these gentlemen, at his deathbed or near the end of his life, regretted establishing the Federal Reserve.
I get all the Federal Reserve publications, and when I went to college, I was trained in Keynesian economics, and they're in agreement with Griffith on everything that is historical fact. They just think it's a good thing, and he doesn't.
Yeah, you see, the idea is that we want to solve poverty. We want to increase the economy. And to a certain extent, having access to capital is very important. God took care of that with his land laws in ancient Israel under that agricultural economy. Today, they just create money. The problem is that it's still uneven in how it gets out. And part of this, you can understand, is that it takes a professional to manage your money now. Okay? We're getting up to the point of 20 to 25% of all people employed are shoveling money from one account to another. They're getting paid somehow, and it's coming out of labor. Labor is devalued. Okay? Self-sufficiency is devalued. We are now interdependent, and when you become so interdependent, you're enslaved. Okay, you aren't free. Okay, see, because then it means that serving God becomes a real big decision. Do you eat? You know, Mr. Hahn was president of the International Banking, the largest bank in Canada. They had a division over international investment. He quit that. I mean, he several times in his life. You get his testimony free if you buy any of the products. He had to walk away from lucrative offers. And in almost every case, a year, 2 years later, they're under investigation, fines are being paid. He sort of sensed what was going on. He hightailed it. He's got his own company now. He's never taken an investment from anyone who ever came to his speaking engagements. He teaches regularly for Midnight Call Ministries. But there is a real need, and I've told him we have to come up with some way to deal with people who want to put their savings where the risks are at least balanced. He's afraid, he knows that there's no perfect answer. He does his best in his money management firm for his clients, most of whom are not in the church. There's no perfect answer because the ultimate solution and our ultimate security is Christ alone. That's it. But in the meantime, we need to try to keep, you know, free. We need to be free so we can serve our family. We need to be free so that when the hour is most needful, we can spread the gospel to those who maybe are finally waking up. And because, you know, just like in personal lives, a lot of times we don't pay attention until there's a problem. I think it's going to happen to the nation. It's going to be, you know, God's reaped whatever he can reap under the good times. We've got some trials coming ahead of us, whether it leads to an end time thing or it's just another cycle in history. Okay? Yeah.
Could inflation ever get as bad as during the Carter-Volcker period?
We could see inflation, but the greater danger is deflation. If the dollar becomes unacceptable, then deflation occurs. And that makes debt an even worse of a burden. Inflation eases debt. We're in an inflationary time now. It's time to get rid of debt. But when it comes down, look out. Yes?
This interdependency in the world economy today where we're so much free trade, then would you think that NAFTA, more free trade, is a bad thing?
It's like any kind of drug. It's good in the short term and bad in the long term. And that's the problem. You see, the more skillful we are in putting it off, the greater the fall when it does finally collapse. Because the basic assumptions underlying it is not valid.
Okay.
See, and the system for the distribution of the wealth is invalid. We see that because the rich continually get wealthier, and this is a worldwide phenomenon. There was a question over here.
Well, I was going to say, Karl Marx said that if you make a free man compete with a slave, you enslave the free man. And so if we think we're going to compete with slave labor in the third world and remain free, it's not too likely.
Well, even if they aren't technically slaves, the Chinese are almost endless in being able to come to work. And not to mention the Indians as well. And they had a very successful series of meetings this 2 weeks to try to align their interests more closely.
Something I've been thinking about a lot the more terror that a lot of people don't understand is, as you were mentioning, this interdependence of the economy. Is that one thing September 11th showed people was that if you have people who hate us, a few crazy people who hate us willing to die because of the economic boom to our country. I think the concern with what's going on in the Middle East there is like if Iran were getting nuclear weapons and sneaking some terrorists forward, one horrible nuclear terrorist event would have huge
Let's get a little more simpler. If it became necessary for us to examine 25% instead of 2% of everything that comes in and out of the borders, the economy would shut down.